Welcome to the Mindful Surfer podcast with myself, Will Foster, and my co-host, Liam Morgan. Liam, what is the news?
What's the news? Well, we are officially, people have listened to a few episodes before this, but we're out now, aren't we? We've gone live. We pressed the live button on the show.
I'm coming up. I want the world to know. Got to let... Oh, shush now.
That's Will speaking, by the way. Somebody did say to me that we sound very similar, but that's... Given that I'm a northerner and you're from the West Country, I can't hear that.
Well, people think I've got a posh voice.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
Everyone's got their own opinion. But apparently we sound similar.
Yeah.
Which I'm thinking, bloody hell.
Maybe after sort of...
Got this northern, eh?
Ham up the northern
opposite,
accent.
Opposite me.
Now let me tell you about surfing.
Yeah.
So the news is we put it out there. It's kind of a relief in a way, but also with that relief of giving birth to your project, if I can use that analogy, comes a sort of degree of... vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
because we can't all be perfect in our putting into practice this idea that like a stone, I think this is again, please forgive me if you were a student of a Buddhist philosophy and I'm getting this wrong, but you know, like a stone doesn't feel or respond to the weather and the sun and shine and the storms and the wind and the rain and all of that sort of stuff.
Mm.
So we try and be impervious to both criticism and praise, so that you're just in the moment, you're not affected by either of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, because we're human beings, that there is an inevitable vulnerability in putting anything out there that is even marginally outside of your comfort zone or what you've previously been used to.
Yeah, big time. I have been producing content online with my Will Foster coaching Facebook page for years. And then I was helping a clothing brand who do self-development called Human Unlimited. And via those two channels, was sometimes getting hundreds of thousands of views for my work. And I had a number of things happen. One, my ego really thrived on feeling that superior feeling of I'm important because I'm getting lots of views.
Yeah.
And it's a very empty and strange feeling, this feeling of uplift from seeing that many views. You know, on one side it's ego, but the other side, you know, should we or could we and can we enjoy our successes? Well, of course. But if you are getting this high from views, well, guess what? When someone writes something that you don't like or that penetrates your psyche and criticizes you in that way, it's going to go the other way too. So the ego is built on, it's like a house that's built on sand.
Yeah.
There's no strength in the foundation if you base your well-being on people liking you. Because if you base your well-being on people liking you, what happens when they don't?
Exactly.
Because if you do anything worthwhile with your life or your surfing or anything in between, you're going to get the ladder.
Mm.
And if you hide and you don't do anything, then that's cool because no one ever gets to see you without the shield on, so to speak. But at the same time, you never grow, and real growth, true spiritual deep growth, takes place when you truly put yourself out there, not just on the internet, but in anything you do, because it's an act of saying, this is who I am in the world. And in doing so, you open yourself up. And I, in getting some pretty viral videos years ago, read a lot of the comments, and they were not all positive. And I remember this sinking feeling in the bottom of my stomach when I read a few that really were criticizing what I'd said. And actually, I think what really hit me and hurt me, or hurt my ego, so to speak, was that there was a grain of truth in what they were saying.
Mm, absolutely.
And that made it even harder, because what the ego can't stand even more is when someone criticizes you and actually comes up with something fairly relevant.
Mm.
And today, now, having evolved a lot more and not having got rid of my ego by any stretch of the imagination, but just become more aware of it, I do treat praise in my social media channels with just mindfulness, which is, there it is, and there's no afters. If the thoughts start going of overconfidence, oh, I'm this, and oh, what about that, and I'm special, and this, if they start going there, I know that's all just the illusion of the mind and the ego. I no longer associate those thoughts with who I am. That's the breakaway.
That's the thing.
When you start breaking away from that association with, oh, this is who I am. I am my likes. Yeah. I am my comments, etc. And you just very mindfully just, you know, watch it in the same way, the criticism too. And let's say you put out a phenomenal post that you think was awesome and it only gets one like. Mm. It's the same both ways. You no longer enter into this up and down wave process of ego. You just observe.
Yeah. And it applies to the thread that runs through the previous episodes. You kind of bring it back into the world of surfing. Is this need sometimes to feel that you're right, or rather the need to feel that you've done something that isn't going to run against the grain of the crowd and what they think, if you like. So you kind of take the praise of the crowd, and that's great. But when the criticisms come, if you only build yourself on that, the criticism's going to hurt even more.
Yeah.
It's a real journey and an education and a challenge and a path, because we're all human and we all carry this ego that we're all on, whether you're surfing or whether you're playing in a concert hall or whether you whatever it is that you're doing, to not stand still, to step away from comfort zone, as we talked about last week, you are inevitably gonna shine a light on your own vulnerabilities, and actually really shine a light on how much your ego does play a part in what image you want to project out onto the world.
Big time. Do you want to relay that story?
Because we've gone live, and here is someone that very used to doing digital and social media as part of a kind of corporate context, a work context, small, but still there is a degree of protection there in a way, even though sometimes the comments can be harsher. And over time, I've learned to not take those things personally as well, because there is a disconnect sometimes. And it's whether something is subjective or objective to where those criticisms come from. But when it's a personal thing, you're trying something new, then absolutely there's a vulnerability, because I have always been, and you've heard me talking about in these shows before, a skeptical user, consumer, advocate of social media. Because I still inherently believe there are a lot of social media that exists, because there is no depth and nuance to it, is a marketed joy that is almost by its very nature designed to make some people feel like they're missing out on something.
Yep.
And we all know that that's not a great thing, because it sort of excludes people from a conversation.
Even if they're not meaning to, it'll make people feel like that.
Because it doesn't give time for the depth and nuance conversation. The conversations that can be born out of longer form content, whether it's surf media, business media, sports literature, whatever it is, that you don't get if you're just posting a clip or a message very quickly. And then the other side to that is, I'm not somebody that has posted pictures of myself doing the things that we talk about very often. I don't have my own collection of surf footage, surf media. So putting that out into a public realm when we're doing a show about surfing is also very vulnerable, because it's pegging yourself right on the point of the journey that you're on, late beginner, improver. And there's a lot of people I hope relate to this. This is what I'm trying to sort of put out as part of our sort of mindful surfer project, if you like, and put our arms around, build a community and a tribe of people who all love the ocean, all want to get the best out of it. But also, as I've had to do, is admit where you're at on the journey. You can apply this to whatever aspect of your life you like, if you want to take this away with you. But say, where are you authentically at? You know, and it's only in doing that with a really good crowd of people around you, to sort of advisors, and Will and I have gone through this from a coaching perspective, is saying, this is where I'm at and this is where I want to get to. But you have to strip all those layers back before there's any chance to improve. Because as you were saying, the ego wears some of the things that we do, our labels, they're a shield to protect us.
100%.
So you can say, I'm a surfer. Well, that's great, because who am I to judge? Nobody's judging. I believe that you're surfing. If you use the energy of the wave to propel yourself forward, you're surfing. It's a joy. That using that energy to move is a joy.
It's a nice way of breaking it down.
Yeah. But the ego bit around surfing is to say, I'm a surfer and I don't want to take advice, because I'm, thank you very much, this is where I am. So to start looking at where you're at actually, and seeing where you're at actually, for me, is the beginning of a journey of improvement.
Big time.
And surely that's the case with everything, right, in life, because it's only in really admitting to yourself who you are, or where you're at, or where you want to get to, or what it is that's holding you back, that you can start to take the first steps to moving outside of your comfort zone.
Big time.
Liberating yourself.
Liberating yourself. I mean, I've got to tell the story that as I saw it from my perspective, and just to give the context to the listeners, Liam and I have entered this journey together into the Mindful Surfer, and that comes with its own unique challenges. I've always produced content from just my own voice, and you've been doing your business stuff, but now we're coming together and we're bringing two voices into one voice, which is the Mindful Surfer. And I put out this post about Liam, self-proclaimed mayor of Coot Town.
Yeah, that's
self-proclaimed.
Yeah.
AKA Coot Daddy-O and all that stuff. And all this kind of kookiness that Liam's worn as a tag, and beginner going to intermediate. And I made the post about that journey of evolution. And then I was getting in the car because I picked you up to go to the surf. And I remember getting to your house and I was turning the car around as I do. In fact, I recall actually taking off my boots because I was thinking, why the fuck am I wearing boots? It's this lovely and sunny.
Well, we come back to the north-south divide again there as well.
A little bit. Took my boots off.
Why are you wearing boots in December, Will?
Well,
what's wrong with you, man?
This is it. And yeah, took the boots off. Massive waft of piss, as you would get from a pair of boots like mine. You don't really pee in your suit that much, do you?
Occasionally. I don't drink enough water. We've talked about that before.
We don't.
That's a body
hack. You are the camel. I've nicknamed you the camel. Tend to store it.
Mayor of Camel Town.
I pee so many times in a surf. Anyway, we sat in the car and there was a bit of a vibe. I was like, we were talking about the post and it was a sense that you were explaining what you thought the post was, what you liked about it, etc. And then I knew there was this next bit coming.
Well, I'm always honest with you. This is almost a stereotypical sort of Yorkshire approach. If I have to say something, I will hopefully deliver it in a reasonably constructive way, but I will always say it.
And I got this vibe from you that something wasn't quite right. Mm. And your honesty in that way was absolutely the signature for me of all great relationships. Mm. Not just okay ones.
Yeah.
Not just near relationships. Like great relationships are built on the foundations of honesty. Mm. And this is including the one with yourself.
Yeah.
And you were really honest with me and you said, well, you know, this and that. And you were not sure. And it's your name and it's this and it's your business. And it's your, there was a lot intertwined in that. And the general feeling in the end was, we both talked about this, that actually it was you putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
And that big just step out into the wild unknown. And then I said, well, listen, now we're already doing this together. Let's get you reading Seth Godin, because Seth Godin, for me, if you have any dreams or ambitions at all about doing anything online,
yes,
with your creativity, your brand, you know, whatever you're surfing, some project, anything you want to do online to create an online business, which, by the way, could be the most surf-friendly business in the entire world or universe, because you really think about it's about location, right?
Yes.
If you can work from anywhere, we'll guess where you're going to work, right?
Yeah.
You're going to work next to the ocean, wherever you like. People relocate in all kinds of places, or they just let's say they do still live in London, but if they're working online, they can just drive down to a beach somewhere 2 hours away, do a bit of work, go in the ocean, and we all have a weekday surf.
Well, listen,
everyone loves a weekday surf.
And it's about freedom of choice and to not be held back by the right time. Again, I think probably spoke about this in very early episodes, the trajectory of deciding that there is never a good time to do something, if you're going to put it in that context. The only time is now.
And Seth Godin talks about that.
He talks a lot about
that. He's this guy that if you're listening to this, you have any idea about creativity, Seth Godin.
Yeah.
Any of his books. But sorry, Liam, I just wanted to make sure I got that reference in there.
Well, obviously at risk of this whole show turning into Liam's book review, because, you know, I like a long book rather than sometimes a...
Dude, it's more mindful.
...frivolity of social media, but that's because I'm an all northern bloke, as we keep talking about. Anyway, coming back to the point in hand, and the serious point for me in this with Seth Godin is... There are lots of things when I read this book. He's written a number of books. He's a direct marketeer. Some of the themes in this I've encountered before from a work perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only when you read it in the context of what we're doing now. I would say it's a fantastic read. This is the what to do when it's your turn, and it's always your turn. How people interpret that in a lineup, by the way, we'll come back to.
Very much so.
So the next time that I drop in on Will, I'll say, look, I've read the book. It said it's always
your turn. You're dropping in on me all the fucking time right now.
It's always my turn. You gave me the book. I'm just following the lead.
Fuck's sake.
Anyway.
All this surf progression of Liam's is biting me in the arse right now.
But it is absolutely the case that, you know, he is saying just start. And that really resonates with the philosophy that we talked about before. And it will apply directly to the journey of surfing. Whatever room you want to be in your house of surfers, we talk about, whether you just want to stay playing in the white water or whether you want to be ripping and flying off the lip of a wave.
Or even getting into the white water, dude.
Just getting into.
I'm going out of the ocean now.
Yeah.
So if you're that person who has been wondering about surfing.
Yeah.
And wondering about it and wondering about it and actually hasn't done it. It's that person too.
Absolutely that
person. Or even this.
Yeah.
It's the person who was advanced, was intermediate, was maybe really on a beginning journey, who hasn't done it for 10 years as well.
Yeah.
who hasn't found the right time.
That's true.
To get back in the sea, because there just never is a right time.
We will leave some links about how do I get into surfing, because this is not just a show for anybody that's already started that. This is for people who want to know how to do it as well, right? And just getting outside of that self-imposed wall sometimes and thinking there is never a right time to do something. So just make the step. And even while you're deciding what it is you want to do, just do something. Don't stand still and decide what you want to do.
I love that.
You know, and he's talked very much about if you want to sing, sing. If you want to write, write. If you want to make something, make something. Don't let somebody hold you back. And to connect it with the social media thing as well, and, you know, we're always talking about surf like no one's watching. Well, everybody's watching these days because we're such an interconnected world of social media and connections and who knows. So you've got to try and get out there and not worry about failure, because it's only in failing, making those mistakes, Christ, we've all made them, that you learn the lessons and you go on and you try again. And then the next time you might get it a little bit better. You might not get it right. And who's to say what perfection is? But at least those falls that you make, metaphorically and actually, the kind of mistakes that you make, metaphorically and actually, as I'm talking about, all come back to the point of you being happy and being in, you know, fulfilled as a human being. Because we ain't here for very long.
So true. I've seen, in talking about this failure aspect, I've seen you fall off more maybe than most other people have ever surfed with. Trying stuff. And I'm barking at you to cut back. Like the other day, you know, you've taken off. And then you're still looking down the line on the wave, and it's not a down the line wave because there's nothing to pump on. And I can see you losing all your speed that you've just generated off the takeoff. And I'm shouting at you, cut back! And you've swung your board back into the lip and fallen off every other wave or... And I've seen you fall off trying to go for takeoffs. I've seen you pull out and then go for them and then get flipped over the falls. And you have fallen off a ton of times. And what's starting to happen now is you're starting to make it. And you're only making it because the amount of times you've fallen off. Because this is your beginner to intermediate journey, isn't it,
Dave? Absolutely. Because, you know, always being comfortable. And that's what I mean about where do you wear your ego badge, you know, of what you are. Here we are with surfing is... Yeah, I'm a surfer. I surf, you know, came back from Aussie. I got a board. I was surfing. I can ride the line. I can just trim nicely down the line. Well, that's not where I want to be, but in your head, then you're still surfing and then you move away and you lose all the fitness and you lose some of the muscle memory and all of that stuff still in there somewhere. And to come back to anything or to progress, you've got to strip yourself all the way back to the very raw basics of your, as Seth Godin would say, you've got to get naked.
Yeah,
you've got to be almost prepared to.
You know, so I said, yeah.
Will doesn't mind getting naked anytime, but you've got to be able to stand and look at yourself in a mirror and love everything you see, and then start moving forward.
Yeah,
if that's not too deep, dude.
Damn straight. No, it's not too deep. And let's bring it onto the light, which is getting naked, which is this naked surf I've been talking about for a while. I'd love to try. I've been saying it for years. Still haven't done it.
If you want to
down the beach to Saunen. People start going, oh, I'm gonna start watching out for this. But we go to Saunton every year as a family. I've done since I was 0 years old. I've skinny dipped in Saunton Beach and a number of beaches a number of times. But the skinny surf, I know it's the waxed and pubes thing. Like you'd have to have a good old trim. If you go and surf naked, I think you got to trim your pubes. I don't even think you want to wax them.
Listen, if you
want to... Because that's chafing. You should a little trim.
At the best of times, skin on wax is an unpleasant experience if you
very
do it for long enough.
Very unpleasant.
A Lord only knows what it would be like on a foamy. For me...
Foamy would rip you. For me... new genitalia, wouldn't it? Oh.
Yeah. So, I think you would need some sort of reconstructive surgery after that.
The other thing... Not only would you have to get your wax right and your pubes right, the other thing is... If you're surfing with mates, it's the asshole canal, you know, because you're paddling. Someone's paddling in front of you. Your face right now.
We haven't got a
whip.
I don't know where this is going.
We're segueing. We're segueing. But it's important. It's important. Yeah. This is important. This is as important as philosophy and all our mind work and body work. And I'll finish on this. But just what I'm trying to say is if you're thinking about going for a naked surf, is just watch out for that friend who's just a bit in front of you. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
And moving on. We got...
Ladies and gentlemen, if you see a naked surfer at Saunton, please phone 999.
It would definitely be me. And by the way, it was cold.
Yep.
In advance, it was cold. It was cold. Okay. Has everyone got that? We got this first segment, which we do each week, which is the mindfulness corner, the mindful surfer. And it's a little chance to just check in with your breath, slow everything down so you can feel present and centered, and the kind of why is always that awareness aspect. And the more aware you are of your own mind, the more aware you are of your ego. And if you're more aware of that aspect of yourself, you can observe it more and let it pass and be more authentic about the relationships you choose and where you go to surf and what board you ride and what you want to do with your career and how you want to make money and how just the whole shebang, the whole thing opens up Pandora's box when you become aware of your mind and letting it pass. So just take a deep breath in through your nose and breathe out. And deep breath in and breathe out. And what I want you to do now is I want you to put in a very, very hands-on example of power mindfulness has to refocus and calm your state so you can be at your best when you're in the ocean. So what it is it's four breaths. So let's say you just wiped out. Let's say you've just been held down. Let's say you've just dealt with an angry surfer. Let's say you're not on your game and you just feel a bit off and a bit tired and a bit grumpy and whatever. Let's say you're in the sea and you're noticing that state. Just do these four breaths now. So it's breathe in for 4 seconds and it's breathe out for 8 seconds. So take a deep breath in and breathe out for 8. 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, take a deep breath in for 4. 4 and out for 8. 7, 6, 5. Breathe out slowly. 4, 3, 2, 1. And then just do one more. And that's the fourth breath. Take a deep breath in. And breathe out for 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Good work. How do you feel when you do deep breathing? What happens to you?
It's always worked really well for me. I mean, it's going to sound a bit strange, but it is absolutely, if you're aware of it, one of the things that you forget to do. You don't stop breathing because that would be
a bit fatal.
But certainly I, using my own experience, we're not talking about life or death situations really most of the time, kind of stress that comes out of doing things that sort of, you know, put you outside your comfort zone that relate to life, family, business, money, surfing, you know, whatever it might be. Dealing with human beings, other human beings. And if you can regulate the breath, you know, almost that deep diaphragmatic breathing.
Yeah, that's right.
And without going outside of my area of expertise, you'd have to speak to the sort of doctors and scientists about this. But for me personally, it works really well to kind of regulate through deep breaths, breath holding. I just simply don't do it enough. I forget, you know, even in those situations. And it's only when you sort of pause and go, okay, let things settle, and then you go again.
It's really cool. In my work with clients, helping them with their well-being mentally and physically, it never ceases to humble me how powerful the two relationships are, mind to body, body to mind.
Mm.
If you think, let's say, angry thought enough times in a row and really buy into it and relive it and et cetera, let's say from your past, you can feel anger in the body and the body chemistry changes. So the mind has this incredible effect on the body. In the same way, if you do some deep breathing or go for a walk, or do something creative or do a workout or go for a surf, that the body has this effect on the mind. But to say that there's just one relationship one way and not the other is foolish. It's a perfect two-way relationship. What I would recommend to anyone listening to this is if you're only harnessing one avenue, so let's say body to mind, then you're missing half the picture. And this is where I believe the most complete well-being program in the world is the one where you're bringing it all together.
Yeah.
So you're getting an awareness practice into your life of your mind, which we may call meditation.
Yeah.
And that's the ideal, I would say, 10 minutes a day as a minimum, up to 30 minutes. And a book that I could highly recommend if you're a real beginner at meditating is The Secrets of Meditation by David Jay. We'll leave that in the show notes. It's always the book I use to try and refer people onto. Following people like Eckhart Tolle is always a smart move on that front.
Yeah.
But as a surfer, how the mind affects the body is on a happiness and performance level. You could be out in the ocean and if someone's got in your way and it's put you off and it's frightened you or it's angered you, or if you can't be aware that repetition of that past, reliving in your present over and over, isn't affecting your ride, your surf experience, well, you're not going to have as much fun or performance as well. So that's a hands-on one of the mind to body for a surfer example there of the power of meditation. Mm-hmm. And how you're building this practice and habit of being able to be aware of your own mind that way round. And then the other way around, body to mind, is if you're starting to just feel, you know, anxious and it's making you have anxious thoughts in the ocean because, you, let's say, the waves are big or bigger than you're used to, deep breathing technique.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is it has a physiological level. So this is now body to mind. So that's going to simmer down just a little bit of that cortisol adrenaline and raise up a little bit more of your sort of serotonin calming hormones.
Absolutely. You know, you take it out onto the land as well, that body-mind sort of dynamic combination. And you know, I am not the only person to be saying this, but this works for me, and I've seen it work for other people that I know very well, is the exhaustion, the body exhaustion, but from a good way, from repetitive and exercise that you don't feel is a chore, if you like. So it's almost you are in a
sustainable
flow, it's a flow state of exercise that you're not doing in a gym or in a, and look, some people can get this from those places, but you know, particular to the ocean exhaustion or a job that requires physical exertion, there's always been a nice balance for me with once that exhaustion and the muscle tightness reaches a certain level, it calms and quietens the mind anyway. Mm. There is a tipping point when that isn't happening, that the mind and the ego becomes louder and talks more. You know, this is sort of almost received wisdom in many respects now. But that kind of combination of awareness and of both aspects of what creates balance in a person, in a human being, and allows some of the quietening of the mind to happen.
Nice.
It's kind of making sure that the body is also not exhausted, but is physically satisfied from an amount of energy expended on a daily basis.
It's really interesting you mention that. I feel we're all so individual in this, and I go the other way. If I've surfed loads and loads and loads and done loads and loads and loads of exercise, my mind can become a bit overactive. I get a bit overwhelmed in some ways.
Really?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And so it's interesting because it's the, you know, to thyself known be true. Yeah. And we've talked about this since the beginning. And so much of this show is just about, the show is about awareness.
Yeah.
Let's use that one word. And once you use that one word as the umbrella to what we're doing, the mind-body-stoke factor that we've coined here is tuning into your own system. My one is dialing down that, like, whoa, because when I've exercised loads, I get this in my mind. It goes faster and faster and faster. Yeah. I get almost hyperactive a little bit. So for me, it's about being mind aware then. You know, when I'm having dinner, because I can almost get a bit anxious when I've done too much in the day. Not almost, I do, I get anxious. And everything's fidgety and whoa, I just need to get that food in me, bring that down. And notice my mind, you see. Whereas for yourself, it's the other way around. But the reason why we have these conversations is just, it's about mindfulness. And not about, this is what you should do.
Yeah, there's no should in this.
There's no like, well, you've now heard Liam say what you said, so how about doing like 6 hours of surfing a day and rather than like one or two or whatever. And this is not my way of saying, you know, don't put in hours and hours and hours of exercise. It's just that only you can know.
Find your place.
For yourself, where your balance is at. Everyone's got a different dose. Every client I've ever worked with, every single one, and I've done over 10,000, I've probably done 12,000 hours now of one-on-one work with people's minds and bodies as a PT and a mindfulness coach.
Yeah.
12,000 hours has given me a serious epidemiological, highly anecdotal, I admit, study into the individual nature of human beings. It's humbling.
Well, that's where all...
Down to the foods, down to the activities, down to the rest, down to the relationships, you name it.
One size does not fit all. It's an individual thing, isn't it? So that's what we're talking about. And you're just going to find your balance between, we talk about this a lot as well, this is a recurring theme, but it's a good one, is where's the order and where's the chaos? And the harmony that exists between those two places is sometimes where the greatest things happen or occur.
Work and rest.
Work and rest, yeah.
Work and rest.
Work, rest and play.
Work, rest and play. Finding that balance between those.
Yeah. How Mars Bar ever coined that as a way of selling chocolate bars is beyond me. But that's what it was, wasn't it? Work, rest and play.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah.
In fact, I saw, if you want fucking even crazier, marketing bullshit. I saw on Ben Coomber's post. And by the way, please check out my great friend, Ben Coomber, I've been on his show before. He's been on mine. And this is a podcast I did years ago. He's got a great nutritional podcast, mindset, training, does some great work. He put a little Instagram post up, and it was it was called Slim Water.
Okay.
Fuck me. That is clever. Diet water. How can you sell diet water? That's a real, that's a thing. Someone's making money out of selling diet water.
Like, what was it? Like H2 0.5?
Oh, I've no idea. Can you imagine buying it? Oh, look, honey, I got this special water. It's going to help me lose weight because it's lower in calories than other, what? Yeah. Come on. Hey, hope you're enjoying the show. If you connect with what we do here at The Mindful Surfer, why not share it with your friends? Or go on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Because the more ratings we have, the more likely it is Liam and I can come back week after week and keep building this community of mindful surfers. Now, let's get back to the show. Let's move on to segment number two. So it's the Mind Body Stoke, where we talk about things Liam and I have been doing with our minds and bodies to raise the stoke levels. Dude, hit me. What have you got there?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I was going to bring this in. I was simply going to talk about, because it sort of intersects all three and how this affects things. I will say one thing on the body front is there is a fitness angle to this show and how to sort of maintain many, many more years of surfing fitness. And indeed mind fitness, you know. So just on that kind of looking at, we're very good as a society at focusing, and we're getting better at the other side, but just we're very good at society focusing on bodily fitness, you know, physical health. It's all about sort of, you know, strength and training and conditioning. And we're only now starting to look at ways of talking about mental fitness and mental development, not mental health. We mentioned him probably before on the show. There's a guy created an app called Fika, I think, for students and sports people around actually really banging that drum for mental fitness and the things you can do to work your mind as you would do if you wanted to sort of correct strength imbalances in your legs, for example. So the sooner we start looking at both of those things combined as a way of training and developing, I think that the better we'll be. And so some of this stuff kind of sometimes intersects because it's fitness.
Oh, of course it does. Of course it does.
But body-wise, I've just slightly rolled back on carbs a little bit, certainly morning carbs, to try and sort of get a little bit leaner for some of the longer surfs we've been doing. I said about supplementation, that's kind of helping a little bit. Deeper sleep through adding a bit of magnesium in and starting to sort of recognize that at my age and some of the intensity of surfs we're doing and some of the workouts that's happening is just what's required to make sure that body's functioning in the right way. Mm-hmm. But I was going to start talking as well, I don't know if it's the right time, we can sort of go in and out of this, but about allowing the body from a where you are from a developmental perspective in terms of what's it now doing in the surf, you know, what can it, what's the muscle development, muscle memory starting to do, and then the application to trying different boards. So you're kind of starting to dial where is your body from a fitness perspective, what can you do with it, how is it improving? Is it improving the length quality of surf? Yes, actually it is. And that's part of it as well. But also it's that sort of board selection as well and trying so many different things has an influence, again, this is just me anecdotally, on how you work those boards. And having used so many in such a short space of time for the level that I've...
How many, dude?
Certainly, I'm just counting through here, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 boards in the last couple of years been sort of surfing on and off.
It's epic.
For different things. This is just the main, you know, a couple of Gulfstreams, a speed dialer and a old retro rocket. These are my old go-to boards. Mm-hmm. I've been back on my old Graham Bunt Mini Mal, which I think I first bought from Surfed Out, dare I say, about 20 odd years ago.
Yeah.
21 years. But then some of the Soft Tech Revolution, the Bomber, an old sort of the Brainchild. I've tried 2 puddle jumpers. Yours, a 6-foot one, which was great the other day. A 5'8" puddle jumper. There was, I've got the Mick Fanning Little Marley shortboard. Softboard, which is fantastic, not Soft Tech, it's Mick Fanning's own label. The 8'2" mid-length, your longboard that I've really struggled to ride. Mm-hmm. As you said, I think only you and your brother can ride that one. But just that variety, your body has to do different things.
Yes.
It really challenges what you thought you'd learned on the previous wave or session. And to squeeze them all into that period of time, I think has helped my body react to different conditions and to sort of develop accordingly, almost on a subconscious level, that maybe I wouldn't have had the opportunity to do. If I had have just stuck to one board and not wanted to sort of, you know, again, go outside of my comfort zone with it.
You've removed your, not removed your ego. It's impossible to remove your ego. You've been aware enough of your ego to let it pass.
Yeah.
And then allowed your heart and soul,
yeah,
if we call it that,
yeah,
higher self, whatever name you have for it, to be open-minded to new possibilities.
Yeah.
Jump on a new possibility.
Yeah.
AKA different board.
Yeah.
Try.
Yeah.
Mostly fail.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
Get a few successes.
Yeah.
Learn.
Yeah.
Step three. Step four, readjust.
Yeah.
Go again. Next one. One, try. Two, mostly fail. Three, have a few successes.
Yeah.
Four, so therefore learn.
Yeah.
Four, again, readjust. You've navigated that over and over and over and have progressed very, very quickly. Yeah. You were, just to give the listeners an example, you were only getting a few waves, maybe 4 to 6 waves per session. You're now getting upwards of 25, 30. Another, so that's your fitness. So you've been really open-minded to things that you're going to need to do to improve your fitness, like resistance training, more stretching, taking better care of your nutrition, because that's all part of fitness. It's nutrition too. So just on a wave count front, you've put in that work and you're open-minded to it, and you've allowed me to help you coach you through that. Carbs, fats, proteins, lots of different bits and bobs around shoulder strength and back strength, etc. On a wave count front has done that. And then on a turns front, this is where it's getting really exciting, because you're starting to realize, this is what I've seen, that you got to react quicker. Surfing at a higher level is about reaction speeds as much as it is balance. Because people think it's balance, like poise, like heel to toe and not falling off. Well, it is, but the quicker you react to the lip, the more likely you're going to stay around the power source. Yeah. And by the way, it makes it easier to balance if you're by the power source. If you're in the slower part of the wave, that's where we fall off, because if you're going slowly, there's no G-force to keep you upright, okay? So your reactions have improved. Your understanding of toe, heel, toe, heel, heel, toe, heel, toe, up and down the wave face has improved, and all these kinds of things. But it's done so because underneath all these board changes and bits of coaching from me, and surfing different waves and all these different aspects, underneath all of it is an underlying quality of open-mindedness.
And again, it's a challenge, isn't it? Because it challenges where you think you're at, your ego, all of that sort of stuff. Again, Seth Godin talks about this very well, to link it back to the book we were talking about at the beginning, is that we all have almost a fear of stupidity.
Of course.
And looking stupid or not being an expert straight away.
100%.
And I'll bang on about
it. I have that.
Yeah.
Hands up straight away.
I'll bang on about it for so many times. And I'm talking to myself here as well as everybody else, and I hope there's a lot of people who are looking to progress, who are in this sort of bracket of beginner, intermediate, sort of where are they on that sort of chart, if you like. Surf Simply do a good chart on this as well, but you know, we talk about the House of Surf. Where are you in? Which room are you in? How do you get into the next one? So if you plot where you are and you do that authentically, and you start to drop the fear of making mistakes and the fear of being stupid, because who gives a shit, you know? That's surf like no one's watching. Because if you surf like no one's watching in those stages in the beginning where you are not frightened of failing, falling, having a go, because only improvements come with that. Improvements don't come with staying exactly where you are, because around you things are changing. You've got to move and you've got to keep going. If you want to define what your version of improvement is, and you plot that and you say, where do I want to get to? Anybody that's kind of either been surfing for a long time but hasn't progressed, or has just started, or wherever they are, the best thing that I've tried to do with it is drop the barriers that would have previously prevented me from doing that. And one of the biggest, and this goes back to the social media points as well, is the fear of looking stupid. And who cares? Everybody makes mistakes. Anybody in any field of excellence has just simply had more practice, put in more hours, be more dedicated, more committed. Once you start setting aside the sort of physical attributes, that's why they are very good at what they do. They weren't good the first time they started doing something, or they weren't the finished article. Nobody ever is the finished article. So if you put in hours of practice and you're relentless and you embrace failure, looking a bit stupid and having a go, then that's when progression comes at any level that you're at.
Totally, totally agree. I want to go back to the House of Surfing.
Yeah.
Because it makes me think of the dreams we have.
Yeah.
For this program,
yeah,
for this show, and it's to one day hold retreats, and we're really coining this House of Surf aspect. It just Dude, hats off for that analogy, because from going from one room to the next, you can really visualize that.
Yep.
As a surfer or any sport for that matter. But if you put them into rooms, like I'll give you my example. What are the things that I can do as a surfer? What would I like to do? What's my next room? The room I'm in currently now is I get lots of waves. I can surf a broad range of waves.
Do you know, I've just seen somebody else has got a house to surf.
Here we go.
Yeah. We'll put that on.
Kiss goodbye to that.
We'll be talking about it. Somebody else is. No, carry on.
It's this thing I just want to say. It's that I can get a lot of waves. I can surf a broad range of waves. I can longboard and get step on a gun if I want to in 8 to 10 foot surf. I can do cutbacks, re-entries, floaters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What I can't do is airs, and I'm not at all comfortable in the barrel and how to navigate a barrel. And that room is a big, big dream of mine. If I really think back to when I started this online project, of which one of my, if not my biggest goal, was to have mobility in my life, therefore be able to surf more and spend time with the family. Mm. If I put one of the big, big whys in that bundle of wanting to surf more, it's to get barreled and learn how to do it and do some airs before I hit my 40s. Although Kelly's, Jesus.
Don't be cruel about people in their 40s.
Dude, but no, I think it's this thing where, yeah, quite. Dude, you're doing fucking amazingly. Yeah. My brother's a great example of longevity as well, my God. But I think it's about being honest about our dreams sometimes, because it's funny, isn't it? It's like, it's in a way, it's an act of vulnerability, being honest about that, because you're making yourself known again and you're making yourself open to someone being like, that's a bit of a silly dream.
Well,
someone might think it's nonsense. How would you have that as a dream?
Yeah.
You know?
Don't apologize for your dreams.
Mm.
Don't feel that they're wrong because you're the wrong age. Whatever media is telling you, you're in the wrong bracket. Thankfully, a world that encourages and embraces diversity, I hope now, and that kind of applies to everything. So never feel that you are, that there is a wall around you that stops you trying to do the things you want to do. And societal pressures do that, don't they? You're taught that you don't want to fail. You don't want to look stupid. So again, I'm going to use, Seth Godin talks about this as concrete dreams. It's safe to experience dreams that have no hope of coming true, where you might fly, you've got superpowers, or you're Batman. It's quite vulnerable to have a dream that if you put in the effort, the energy, and you start walking forward towards it, you could make happen. And even if it doesn't come true,
beautifully put,
at least you've tried. He talks about it very much as that the difference is the kind of unreal dreams and the concrete dreams. Concrete dreams are based on effort and a sense of, to quote him, what is possible.
Mm.
So that's why living with the possible.
That's fascinating. He says living with love that.
Living with the possible takes guts. It's possible for any of guys and girls, if you'll allow me to use that term broadly, who are in the ocean, in the lineup at any given time. It is possible for any of those people to have a dream about doing any of the things we're talking about. Barrel riding, airs, cutbacks, floaters. If that's what they want to do, it's a concrete dream, but it requires access to things, patience, training. So there are a lot of things that, you know, you have to put in place to do it.
Do you have a surfing dream?
I'd be insincere if I said, in a way, and I say this with all sincerity, that part of it I'm living.
Mm.
So I do have surfing ambitions and surfing dreams. Mm. I'd love to get barrel too.
Mm-hmm.
There are ambitions I want to, along the ladder. Somebody's bloody got this house to surf now, so I surf ladder or whatever.
We've just changed surfing.
To the ladder of surfing.
Fuck the house
to the
of
tree
surfing.
Of surfing.
The tree of...
Well, you know what I mean. So the snakes and ladders of surfing. So there are ambitions I have to do with surfing. But I am, and to bring it back to mindfulness as well, once you're entering the ocean on a regular basis, for me, there's a lot of the dream fulfilled there.
Mm-hmm. That's where when I think about what I've learned from you, which is a lot, it's been more subtle but much more powerful.
Yeah.
From my way around to you, it's reasonably obvious and actually hard to get away from because I'm just shouting at you in the lineup. So you've just got no choice. Paddle harder! Come on, mate, get through this wave. Yeah. There's only five left in this set when we're getting pounded, and then I'm like, right, cut back now, because you don't look back at the phone, but you are now. Yeah. You're doing it more. So I'm just shouting at you, you've got no choice. Your way around is more subtle but more powerful, because there's this stoke and gratitude you have for, I'm not kidding, like 6 inches of surf or 2 foot and no formation in the waves. So I'll look at it in the lens of, well, it's 2 foot, but, oh, mate, whereas you're like, mate, get in. There's waves. I think yours is black and white. If there's ways, bang, grateful. And that is something I've learned from and will continue to learn from. And this is what's great about great relationships, is you learn from each other. And I think it's really important to stay humble about, you know, your weaknesses and things that sometimes hold you back, and also be grateful and able to own the things you are good at and strong at, and not apologize for those either. But I just want to come on the second segment here. We've got this mind, body, stoke. I just want to mention a body aspect. This really comes back to authenticity for me. I have done all kinds of experiments with food and how it makes me feel over the years. I have now gone back onto a carnivore diet. Now, I just to give the backstory, have autoimmunity, psoriasis, and a couple of other conditions, which are all very controllable, very manageable with diet and lifestyle. But basically, my requirement to deal with health in that way might be that much higher than someone else who doesn't have autoimmune conditions, let's say, for example. But we've all got, we're all on a spectrum, let's say. There's no one with perfect health, put it that way. So all this thing called health to deal with and to manage and control and get to its optimal level. And the one thing, if I was to really break down what could end up being a long-winded story and just break it all the way down into one thing that stops people from exploring new ideas and possibilities in well-being, and I'll call it just on nutrition for now, is beliefs. Because if someone had come to me and said, "Will, you can have a clear brain, better skin than ever, still surf a bunch and get wave after wave of weight with no loss of energy, just eating meat and fish and eggs and no vegetation, like none." Someone was to say that to me 2 years ago, even a year ago, I'd have gone, "You're fucking off your rocker, mate. Get out." Okay? Because my belief was, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
And here's what's fucking humbling. You then are faced with adversity. And when we're faced with adversity, we either sit with the adversity and let it eat away at us, or we have to do something new. So when you get to the have to, this is when shit changes. So I was at adversity this winter, my knee, my brain, I was getting foggy, I was getting dizzy, I was feeling strange, I didn't feel myself, up and down energy, all sorts. And that is when I made a change. And guess what? My belief now is it's a really awesome tool. And I feel like I cannot believe I'm just eating meat and fish and eggs. Check out the carnivore diet online if you're at all interested. It's a very extreme diet. It goes, the other end of the spectrum is a vegan diet where you don't have any of those foods at all. And this is what I really want to refer back to with my body hacking. There's a guy who really stood out for me on a podcast just lately, and I listen to a lot of content here. It was from the Brute Strength podcast, not the host, although that's where the show is. It's a really, the guy who hosts that show is great. The guy on there was a guy called Dr. Anthony Gustin. We'll leave in the notes. And the show was about the ketogenic diet. And he talked about the cyclical nature of nutrition. Okay. And everybody, whether, you know, it depends on which end of the spectrum you're on, lesser or greater, you know, depending on your health status, has what he believes, and he's researched this tons and has been involved in the field of nutrition for 20, 30 years, is real. And you can tell when he speaks, right, that he's not only speaking from a book, which, let's be honest, is like 20% of the picture, the 80% of the picture. Has he fucking done it? Is he living it? Is he breathing it? Does he believe in it? Is he, you know, is he open-minded to all different aspects? Now, he is, and he has experienced these things. And it's the cyclical nature of food. If you go out into the wild, just imagine now, you're driving your car, listen to this podcast, you're walking, listen to it. I don't know, wherever you are, it's a moment of mindfulness. Now, be a wild woman or man right now, a million years ago, half a million years ago, just do it right now. And then start to think about how we've evolved. Food access was unbelievably scarce on everything that you'd want all the time. So always having carbs, fats, proteins, carbs, fats, proteins, carbs, fats, proteins available all the time is impossible. So you go through a cyclical nature of food. And what he has advised, and this really blew me away, and it was so cool, is do the elimination diet for a while that is carnivore until, guess what? It stops working. All nutritional spheres stop working after a certain amount of time because the body inevitably starts absolutely needing glycogen and glucose. And this is the thing. But the thing is that if you then overfeed glycogen and glucose, you start getting symptoms. Inflammation one, sleep quality another, mood during the day, up and down energy, poor digestion, etc. Well, now back off. Mm. So on a basic level, this is going between low carb, higher protein, coming back onto carbs and having moderate protein. Mm. And then maybe even going vegan for a few days. So his month looks like this. It goes, as far as I gauged, and I might got this wrong, but this is how I gauged it, was that he does, within a month, a carnivore phase, so just meat, then comes on to keto, so reintroduction of fiber. Then once he's done keto, goes on to a moderate carbohydrate diet, which is adding bits of butternut squash, sweet potato, just a bit, not loads of carbohydrate. And then final week in the month, carbs, like real refuel carbs, bang, straight back to the beginning. Yeah. And the body goes through this wave effect. And if you think about this wild woman or this wild man, it makes so much fucking sense.
Well, it's variety and it's what's available.
Yeah.
We all animals eat what's available. We're still wearing the meat suit, aren't we? And walking around. We just think we're a bit more evolved. And you look at some of the behavior that we exhibit sometimes and we're probably not any more evolved.
Yeah.
Far from it, in fact.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, those, our sort of forebearers didn't have a Tesco Express or a Waitrose or a whatever it is, Aldi or Lidl, to go and stock up on things. They just had to eat what was available to them. You know, and almost as sort of recent as my grandparents' generation were accidental fasters and would eat maybe not always the variety of food, but it was what was seasonal or available. And there's a sort of movement of going back towards that because it was whole food. It was real food. There were no processed elements to it, you know. And there were times when it wasn't very abundant. We're just in the last, 30, 40 years being kind of, you know, inundated with processed available food that you wouldn't otherwise find or eat. And our bodies haven't evolved a long time before that. We haven't evolved this bit to consume and process and deal with all of the stuff that's in those foods.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about soil quality, I think, on the previous episodes. That's declined. So the nutritional value of what they were eating in that sort of pre-war generation, Second World War generation, and those kind of grandparent generation was much higher as well, you know, in the foods that they were growing, crops that they were growing in the ground. So, we definitely moved away from that. So you can see how that might work. Totally. I mean, I'm very lean, much more sort of pescatarian anyway, my diet. But I think variety is the key, isn't it? And I guess as humans, Homo sapiens, wouldn't have just eaten the same thing over and over again. They'd have eaten whatever it was that was available to them.
Totally. But interestingly, you mentioning this, you've also, correct me if I'm wrong, eaten more protein recently.
Yeah.
And how's that made you feel?
Probably. I've sort of stripped back.
Because you look leaner. You look a lot leaner.
I mean, we've joked about this before. Love a Dorito chili heatwave crisp.
You,
my Achilles heel
this.
Is a beer. I love that stuff. You know, the Irishman in me as well, that kind of my Irish roots absolutely lap up the breads, carbs, potatoes, all of this sort of stuff that is more carb heavy. So I just took it out. This sort of later period of lockdown, even though the pubs are opening again, I've just scaled back a little bit on what I was consuming from beer calories. Certainly reduced my intake of kind of white breads and processed bread, well, just sort of bread products, and getting my starchy sort of carbs from other sources, really. So there's definitely a noticeable improvement. I think for me, it was much more about the idea of preserving some of those surf gains and the surf fitness and the longevity and experimenting with how those gains affect overall fitness levels, reduction of body fat, and improvements that you can take into the ocean. Because if you swing it all the way back round, it's kind of taking yourself outside of your food comfort zones as well in order to realize the gains that you're making. Because let's be honest, and I'm preaching to myself, is that I've often done this, made great improvements, got very fit, and then almost undone it all with a return to periods of enjoying. And some of this is, working, traveling, but you kind of, to sustain those gains, you have to think about nutrition as well as the exercise.
Yeah.
You know, and you can get away with it when you're younger, doing both things badly, if you like, or having one or the other. You have to start thinking about, to preserve that longevity of surfing and enjoyment of the ocean, what else you're putting in your body. So, but I'm a realist, you know, I would say enjoy the good things. Don't, you know, have a beer, enjoy yourself, be happy, be yourself, choose your own path. But also, you know, think about, we talked about it with reference to cycling. Is it the board? Is it the conditions in terms of surfing, or is it me? And you have to sometimes, again, go back to looking at yourself, almost literally in this instance, naked, and saying, what improvements do I want to make? Mm-hmm. Not from an aesthetic perspective, that's a byproduct sometimes. It's from a functional fitness perspective.
Totally.
And diet is a big part of that.
And there's always been two for surfers. One is, do I need to lose body fat?
Yeah.
Or two, do I need to put on muscle?
Yeah.
Because surfing, if you're leaner and more toned, more athletic, more muscular, is going to be a simpler sport.
Exactly.
An easier sport. So those two aspects. And no matter where you're at in your journey, there's always the possibility of change.
Yes.
It's just... notice your habits.
Yeah.
Don't undereat. Don't overeat. Don't undertrain. Don't overtrain. Find the middle.
Yeah.
Wherever you can, as Aristotle once said, find the balance in everything you do, and seek learnings. You know, the internet now is just one giant library. And if there's anything going on with your health or anything going on with your surfing or your life that you're not quite satisfied with and you want to explore change.
Yeah.
Just type it in.
Don't do it.
And you're off.
Don't do a Dr. Google, but research quality resources.
Actually, it's really funny you mentioned that, Liam, because I really want to put this out there as a form of coaching from me to you listening to this in how to digest information. Because I think what happens in today's world, because there's a huge challenge involved with that library, okay? Whether it's surf technique, whether it's fitness for surfing, whether it's nutrition for surfing, no matter what it is, there's a real huge challenge involved, which is paralysis by analysis.
Yep.
Is there's now too much information in some ways.
Yeah.
So how do you navigate through that mindfully? And the way to do it is you use your heart. Your heart has an infinite wisdom. See, your brain, it's all infinitely wise, right? It's all just, I mean, how are we even here? How is this experience of life even happening? It's just in itself a question. Just, wow, we're here. But the heart is unique. And they're measuring the heart now as this and able to analyze the heart in this way. It's this guiding tool that we have in life that tells us where to go. Mm. All I urge you to do is when you're following stuff online is rather than let your ego direct your decision-making, you know, let's say one coach for fitness stuff is a bit out of shape, but you really are drawn to that person. And one other person is a bit more ripped and he's in epic shape. Just notice where your ego and heart is going. Now, the person who's in incredible shape might also respond to your heart too, doesn't it? Yeah. I'm not saying that being in shape is, but you get my point. Yes. And it's the same with nutrition. It's the same with, just listen. Listen mindfully. Yeah. If something that someone says really challenges your beliefs, there's almost more wisdom in that than there isn't someone who you already agree with.
Yeah.
Watch out for that one.
Exactly.
Because that's just your ego. But if you really tune in, you might listen to someone who's got a completely different belief to you in how to do things.
Oh, I think you should always look at that. I'm a big fan of diversity of thinking to challenge what path you're on. You don't have to then agree with it, but it takes you down another route. So it opens
up
some of the sort of grey matter that thinks, okay, maybe I'll have a look at that.
Yep.
You're right. And something I really... you know, you don't have any regrets in life. What I see now, the real upside of the internet is that there's nothing you can't learn. It is almost a sort of utopia of self-teaching.
Yeah.
Whether you want to learn how to strip an engine in a car,
whether
you want to learn to play the piano or the guitar, or whether you want to surf better, whether you want to sort of try techniques around rock climbing, how to strike a football in the right way, you know, you've got access to some world class coaching that you 20 years ago you would never get.
Yep.
So it's fantastic in that respect.
It is. It's so cool.
Anyway,
Surf Media Insights. You want to finish with just the last little point? Wanted to raise this because there's a Mark Healy reference on the inertia post.
Yep.
Got about 50,000 likes. Huge amount of interaction. We'll leave it in the notes. Worth looking at this post. And it's just Mark Healy talking about the implications of being a father whilst going into big waves and risk management. And if you've got family and how do you weigh that all up? And being totally honest, you know, obviously risk goes up the bigger waves you go in surfing. It does to that degree. Like if you are just literally an intermediate surfing, you go paddle out of jaws 30 feet, you're putting yourself in a very risky situation. But the conversation goes on a step, and we spoke about this prior to the show. There's always risk involved. in surfing.
Life's risky.
And it's because life is risky.
Yeah.
There's risk in, you know, you're driving down to the beach, you got in your car, you walked across the sand, there might be a terrorist hiding in the dunes. Well, I mean, for Christ's sake, the amount of stuff, if you really, I think it's about, it comes back to media.
We become so risky. It's about keeping everybody safe.
Completely.
And that is stifling, because there is no safe.
Nope.
And again, it all feeds that narrative of the fear of making a mistake, the fear of being right.
Yeah.
The idea that as humans we like to feel safe. No one's safe. Any, you know, you've just got to get out and try things.
Totally.
And, well, almost to the point that when I cut through a garden cable yesterday, very innocuous thing, but it's the tiny things like that sometimes that are the dangerous thing.
Yeah.
So you're right, surfing. However, I completely relate to what he's saying there, because I went rafting in the Zambezi River about, let's say, 18 years ago. And I think about the conditions that we put that raft down the river on and where I was then in terms of appetite for risk and adrenaline as a 20-something. And now as a father, whether you'd sort of get in the boat again. And his point is absolutely sort of on the money for that.
Mm.
But life is risky.
With kids, you do enter into that a little bit. Although I've not. So I wonder if there's something wrong with me. I don't really think about them if it gets big. I think that's because we're all built so differently.
Yeah.
Coming from my standpoint, I don't think about it.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to raise that point from Mark, which then you got talking about your bit. And then I just want to bring this conversation on just one step further to round this off, which is that, you know, when you enter into life, you're entering into the possibility of, well, definite that you're going to die one day, obviously, hopefully when you're nice and old and sat, relaxed and just asleep, you know, peacefully. But that we are going into the ocean as surfers. And so just by default, we're entering into that. So I think it's an acceptance. This is where we're going with this. Let's accept the risks involved in surfing rather than become so concerned about them that they stop us doing X, Y, or Z. Now that goes, there's a line to be drawn.
Yeah.
And if you go beyond that line and you know you just have the abilities to go into certain wave conditions, then don't.
But there is the parallel to leave it on, isn't it, with what we said at the beginning is within a reasonable context. You know, if you take out the sort of extremes of paddling out at Jaws or Pipeline when the ability makes it almost a guarantee that you die. Or very, very high tense. That's recklessness. But within the confines of your life as well, is that outside is a dangerous place, but it's also a place where fantastic things happen. Great reward happens. And if you let go of that fear of being stupid, the fear of being out of control, the vulnerability that goes with that, then that's where some really fantastic things start to happen as well.
Big time. Well-rounded, dude. What a lovely way to finish the show.
Nice to talk to everyone again.
Amazing.
And, good to be live.
We're rocking this path.
Sending ideas. We're really keen to hear from everybody about what you want to hear about and who you want to hear on here. And it's been a ride.
Totally. We're going to be having guests soon as well. So yeah, guest ideas would be cool. People you want us to speak to. Thanks for having us, guys.
Yep. See you soon.
See you soon.